You can stick around, right? I want to keep the two of you, maybe have Carl.
Committee on May 10th. Senator Cohen.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Quorum is present. Might not seem like there is, but there is a quorum present.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
True.
First of all, let me indicate, and I think members as well as the audience understands that we have a slightly revised spreadsheet as well as a slightly revised document from our last meeting. So just so members have the right document, it's the A6 document, and it's the spreadsheet timed at 6:13 p.m. today's date. So I want to make sure everybody has that. And, Mr. Chairman, to put this in order, let me move the Delete Everything Amendment, the A6 Amendment to the bill, Senate File 1051.
Right. The A6 Amendment is in front of anyone. Everyone, any questions, members? All in favor of the A6, say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion carries.
Okay. And, Mr. Chairman, members, let me just offer a couple of introductory comments. We'll have some discussion about the bill. I'm going to ask Mr. Mueller to indicate what changes have been made from our last document. What I'm proposing for the subcommittee is to comport with what was understood by the electorate in Minnesota in November of 2008. And, Mr. Chairman, I've made these comments a couple of other times, but I've been concerned that we forget what promises were made to voters. Obviously, all of us know that we have a variety of dedicated funds that we deal with in the state legislature. This is truly a unique fund because it's one that's based upon a constitutional dedication as a consequence of the vote of 1.6 million people in the November of 2008 election. And as a consequence, I think that gives us a little bit less leeway to make changes in what we would like to do. And I know certainly with problems that the legislature has had, the state government's had over the last several years, the significant deficits we've had, that there's been an effort, have been places where I think the legislature has appropriated money from the Arts and Culture Fund, from the Outdoor Heritage Fund, to a lesser degree from the Clean Water Fund, and to a lesser degree from the Parks and Trails Fund. That does not comport with what voters understood. So I think just in terms of some very broad comments, let me just suggest what I've attempted to do with this bill. What's presented in Article 1 is the proposed adoption of the recommendations of the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. And I think the one exception with that is there's the $15,000 appropriation to the LCC for the website. And Mr. Chairman and members, I think everybody remembers, maybe everybody does not remember the original history of this, but the amendment originated back in the middle of the 90s with folks from the sporting community, the sportsman community, looking for habitat preservation modeled after the Missouri Amendment. And what was discussed was some type of a commission which would present recommendations to the legislature. There's no question that during the campaign that the promise made to the hunting and fishing communities in the state was that there would be a commission and that it was anticipated the legislature would adopt the recommendations from the commission. And that's what this bill purports to do. There's no question that constitutionally we can do what we want, but I do think there is some, I don't know if I'd call it a moral imperative, but certainly some electoral imperative that we abide by the recommendations of the commission. That's what is in this bill. Article 2 of the Clean Water Fund is somewhat of an amalgamation. I guess I gave some thought initially to whether or not we should simply look at the governor's recommendations. In spending more time and looking at the combination of the governor's proposal, recommendations obviously from the Clean Water Council, which for the most part parallel the governor's proposal, also work done by the conservation community, what's in the bill in front of you is a combination of those recommendations, certainly probably more of the groundwater proposal that has been presented by a variety of people to the state legislature than what was contained within the Clean Water Council recommendations. So you do have some of the groundwater. I think that's a distinction between the governor's proposal, the Clean Water Council, but I think it hopefully makes some sense to members. We had some extensive discussion yesterday relative to the Parks and Trails Fund, and I'll suggest this is probably the most contentious part of the bill. Maybe there are other parts, but I think this is fairly contentious. In a proposal to adopt the recommendations of the DNR Commission that was set up 2 years ago in statute. And I guess my feeling with this is that we put in place a process. This was not relative to the 2008 election, but we certainly put in place a process that would suggest the use of that money with 40% to the state park system, 40% to the metro park system, and 20% to the regional parks and trails system, as well as language, I believe, authored by Senator Tomasoni to set up the Regional Parks and Trails Commission. And I believe that this is something that certainly comports with what was passed by the legislature, adopted by the legislature. I think there's a certain anticipation that that recommendation would be passed on. Additionally, it is the governor's recommendation, and I think that it's appropriate to give some deference to the governor in this regard. Lastly, in the fourth article, the arts and cultural part of the bill, Mr. Chairman and members, I guess by its nature, arts calls for some degree of ambiguity, arts and culture. And so I think we've gotten a little bit of field from what had been intended. As was the case with the Lessard-Sams Commission, or prior to the naming of the commission, in terms of the 2008 election, one of the reasons this thing was put together, and Mr. Chairman, members, it was the Finance Committee of the State Senate that put this together. I think it's a fair statement that the proposal, however meritorious, from the sportsman, just hadn't gained much traction in the state legislature until the Senate Finance Committee came along in 2005 under the authorship of Senator Sams. And one of the very key components to that was the inclusion of the arts and cultural piece. It's something that I first surfaced publicly in 2004. I had initially had some private conversations in 2002. And the promise made to voters in passage of the amendment was that 50% of the money would go to the State Arts Board and the Regional Arts Councils. And should make it very clear to members that when you see appropriations for some of the individual organizations and some very important organizations, would point out, as indicated, I think, in the testimony of Ms. Jens yesterday, that there are approximately 1,500 arts organizations in the state that take advantage of this money. So it's not a single organization that's getting the money. So that obviously is a major part of the bill in front of us. There are also other major appropriations, notably the Historical Society, because that was the other major component in what was attempted beginning in 2005 in the Senate Finance Committee. There are also other appropriations that you can see. I do want to make it clear, though, and I think there are some very important issues and appropriations that are not included in this bill that my suggestion to the subcommittee are better placed in another part of the state budget. And those areas are funded elsewhere in Senate bills. I cannot suggest to members of the committee what's going to happen between an alignment of Senate and House jurisdictions relative to those accounts. I happen to have some optimism that the Senate jurisdictions will be the ones ultimately used. But certainly appropriations for the councils of color, which historically have always been in state departments except for 2 years ago, are in state departments. The appropriation for the civics education is an education. The Purpose School, which has for the most part been in the K-12 committee, has its arts curriculum piece in the K-12 committee. We'll mention one appropriation so members are not confused, and that's a new appropriation from 2 years ago, which has had a great deal of support from, to be fair, members, non-Metro members, and that's the proposal for the county fairs. And in review of the grants that have been made over the last 2 years for the county fairs, there are a number of things that and I've become much more of a believer than might have been 2 years ago, having a better understanding, one, of what has been appropriated, and two, how it's been utilized. However, for the purpose of the arts and cultural heritage piece of this, I suggest a much smaller amount, which I think aligns itself with what have been used in terms of the grants that could be defined as history, arts, or culture. There is an appropriation of significance in Senator Thomasoni's ag portion of his environment bill, and I think that that appropriation is something that could be utilized for any number of purposes. For instance, there are a number of county fairs that purchase sound systems, which I think is something that goes a little bit afield from this bill. There are also a number of appropriations for capital improvements, and this was certainly in terms of the arts and cultural heritage piece was never intended to be a substitute for a bonding bill. So, with the Senate bonding bill, there should be an appropriation, a cash appropriation for those purposes. In Senator Thomasoni's bill, there's an appropriation. In this bill, there's an appropriation for the arts, history, and cultural grants. The total is the same amount. They are just in more appropriate divisions within the state Senate. So, Mr. Chairman and members, that's kind of a brief overview, not of the details, but some of my reasoning behind what's in front of us. I'd like to ask Mr. Mueller to just make sure members understand what changes are being proposed from where we were yesterday. And Mr. Knopf might have something to add, and certainly Ms. Doyle if she wants to jump in at some point.
Thank you. Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'll first go through the article and focus on the language changes in the bill. There are just a few, and they're pretty much mostly technical. And then we'll look at the spreadsheet and we'll show where some of the spending changes have happened. The first change in the language is on page 34. It's some of the new policy language dealing with the accountability for the clean water area. And on line 34.31, we inserted the word at least before 10%, just the amount of TMDL and RAPs that must be completed by the PCA. It was more of a clarification. The next change is on page 37 on lines 17 and 18. This just gives we added an extra year of availability of the appropriations under the Parks and Trails Funds. Sometimes some of these appropriations go towards small acquisitions, both in metro parks and in some of the regional parks. And in the past, we've often had to extend these appropriations after the fact, so the thought was here is just to give them another year up front. So that's on page 37, lines 17 and 18. The next one on line 39, page 39, this deals with the study, the park study at the University of Minnesota. Down on line 31 and 32, we've added since we've created the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission in this bill, we felt they should be one of the entities that is part of this new report, because there are other entities that are being consulted on this report. So we thought it was best to add the commission that we've created.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Sorry, just for clarification here, what page are you on again?
Page 39. Rider language.
Yeah, it's on line 31 and 32. The next change is on page 41. At the very bottom, we've added an immediate effective date that was missing in the original draft. This is the creation of the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Commission. This just gives it an immediate effective date. Most of the rest of the changes, like starting on page 42, I'll go through this in the spreadsheet. There will be some number changes, like the totals on page 42 for the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Total appropriations for the article have increased. Basically, what's happened between the last proposal and this one is we went from a 5% fund balance in the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and down to a 2.7. So that created we were able to appropriate about another $1.3 million in the bill. And when I get to the spreadsheet, I'll show you where that was added. So there's a little bit change in numbers there. The Arts Board total increased by a little bit. That's to keep them at the 50% of the total. On line page 44, lines 14 through 19. This is just some technical change in the way that the Arts Board counts their administrative costs under the total appropriation. The Arts Board is allowed to spend 4% of the total amount appropriated. They had some suggested language. It's purely technical that are incorporated into this proposal here. Line page 45, under the up on lines 3 through 12, and then again on 17 and 18, some suggested new language in the way that the library money gets distributed. This is language that we've carried before, got left out this time, or it was also in the House, and they had some suggested additional language in the formula that they use for getting the money out. And then also on line 17 and 18, just about the distribution of the money over 10 equal payments. Next item. On page 51, just some clarification language with in the appropriations for the Indian Affairs Council. We cleaned that up a little bit. We actually, to make sure that all the money was going out as grants, and there's not any that is going to the language working group, that the spreadsheet was wrong previously and that it identified some money going for a language working group. So we cleaned up the spreadsheet and also cleaned up these different grant programs here and made the last one a little bit more flexible, for it wouldn't be going just for education programs. It could be going for any immersion programs. Then the last one is on page 53. It's the permanent language that allocates 50% of the arts and cultural heritage money to the Board of Arts. And it's just the clarification that it can be the Board of Arts or regional art councils that 50% ongoing would go through. So that's it for the language changes. And you know, if there are no questions, I'll go to the spreadsheet and show where the different changes in money occurred.
Right, questions, members?
Right, Chairman, I have an amendment.
Huh?
I have an amendment.
Maybe I can go through the spreadsheet first.
This is okay. Go ahead. It's not mine. It's not mine, Mr. Chairman. It's Senator Hoffman's.
Okay, Mr. Mueller, why don't you take us through the spreadsheet, yeah, and then we'll entertain Senator.
Mr. Chairman and members, the only changes in money are dealing in Article 4, so we'll skip all the way to the Arts and Cultural Heritage part of the spreadsheet. Since everyone's probably seen the last version of the spreadsheet, the only change is we added starting on page 8, in total we've added about $1.375 million to the overall appropriations out of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Again, this meant the fund balance from 5% down to 2%, and the thinking was there's still a 5% fund balance in the Clean Water Fund and the Parks and Trails Fund, and the thinking there was it's probably good to have maybe a little bit larger fund balance in those funds for, you know, if we ever, next year, if we got to ever fund anything new or emergency or something like that. And historically, the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund has been appropriated down to a lower fund balance, at least initially. So spending that down to 2.7, like I said, created about $1.3 million. To the total Arts Board, it was an additional just $200,000. A big part of the new money went to the Historical Society. So on lines 282 and 283, we added an extra $1,075,000, and then we've split the overall amounts evenly between the grants and the programs. So that was something that was requested by the Historical Society. There's an additional amount on line 302 for the Minnesota African American Museum. And then the other change for the Minnesota Children's Museum on line 322, the total amount going to the Children's Museum is the same. They just wanted a little bit more in the first year than the second year. So we moved $100,000 to the first year, so it's 600 and then 400. And then the last change you'll see is on the last page 10 under the Indian Affairs Council. So I've cleaned up the spreadsheet here a little bit. The total amount going to the council hasn't changed from the last spreadsheet. We're just clarifying that there's none of it going to the language working group. We have 300 per year, 1,000 per year going to language preservation and education grants, 200 per year going for language immersion competitive grants, and then underneath that, there are some two other grants to two other schools that are specified, and those have been in language before. So the total amount going to the council hasn't changed. We've just specified where it's going, and it's going for grant programs. And so that is it for changes in the spreadsheet from the last version.
Questions, members? Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Thomas only referenced amendment. I think this was, is this the one requested by Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Not in there yet. It's,
oh, yeah. You've, Mr. Knopf has it. If I, maybe just put the bill in, I'll suggest, perfect shape. We could have it distributed. This is some language that was inadvertently excluded from the language on page, is it?
36.
36? Okay. Yeah. So if members might, maybe we should wait till it's distributed. I don't know if Senator Thomas, only since he wanted to offer it.
I think I think you explained it very well, Mr. Chairman. Senator Cohen, it was inadvertently left out, and it's got something to do with riparian buffer payments, and maybe Mr. Knopf can explain it if anybody wants to hear it, but I think it just needs to be put in the bill. It's an A7 amendment, and I would move it.
All right, Senator Thomas, only moves the A7 amendment. Any questions, members?
Sure.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Sure.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, what this would do would be there's a, in the DNR shoreland rules, there's a 50-foot buffer requirement for farmland. And it, although it says that if you have a conservation plan that you can farm a little farther, but this, so what this would say is if you're in violation of that 50-foot buffer, or non-compliant, it should say, so they're not really good. Determined violation, but if they're non-compliant with that shoreland zoning requirement of the 50-foot buffer, then any payments they receive from the Clean Water Fund for an extended buffer for that first 50 feet is going to be based on not non-cropland rates rather than cropland rates. The non-cropland rates are less, so they get a little less money for that first 50 feet when they're found to be non-compliant with the DNR shoreland rules. These would be for properties on public waters.
All right. Anything further? All in favor of the A7 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion passes.
So, Mr. Chairman, as Mr. Mueller has indicated, the bill is not significantly different from what we had yesterday. I'm not sure what members would like to do.
I'd like to move the bill, Mr. Chairman.
All right.
Or I'd like you to move the bill. Maybe that's
I suppose that falls into don't look a gift horse in the mouth, I would suppose. Well, Mr. Chairman, I let me just put the bill in front of us, then we can have discussion and any further amendments. I'd move that Senate File 1051 as amended be recommended passed to the full Committee on Finance.
So Senator Cohen has moved Senate File 1051. Questions, members? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I only have one question, but I would like to thank the author of the bill here, the esteemed senator, for the work that he's done here. I know put a lot of effort into this. And I think some of the funding is shifting from state and out here, putting in different areas of the state budget. It's certainly appropriate. The question I would have, and just for an informative thing, and I'm quite surprised Senator Cohen to think about this, but how has this grown over the since the beginning?
I'm sorry, exact amount of funding the very first year that we put this out, but just for an information purposes only. And I know it's been going up, and that's a good sign, the amount of money that's going into this.
So
he's got his calculator out, so I'm expecting to get.
I should have come prepared.
Mr. Mueller?
Wow, I got him stumped. Look at this. And I should have known that myself.
Mr. Chairman, let me just offer a comment. One of the reasons, if you go back to what was originally intended by the Sportsman, like I said, back in the mid-90s or so, was to look at utilization of the sales tax. Because, to be honest, it's something easily understood by people. Folks will recall the campaign where they talked about the 3/8 of a cent, a very easy concept. And to be honest, it's usually absent a very significant economic downturn. Always is usually a growth revenue because the population gets larger and obviously you got more people paying a sales tax. And Mr. Chairman and members, let me indicate why when we put this bill together in the Finance Committee and sent it to the Tax Committee, we looked at the sales tax as a growth revenue. And major reason I was interested in trying to pursue this and put this together was when you looked at the long-range budget trends, even if we got back to the significant surpluses of say, 99 and 2000, even if we got back unexpectedly, because I don't think anybody expects that we'll get back to those days, but let's say hypothetically we did. Once you get past the major budget drivers of K-12 education, health and human services, higher education, to a lesser extent public safety, environmental programs, arts and cultural programs, history programs, parks and trails programs, get nothing but scraps. We'd look at very insignificant increases in general fund budgets, which would be minimal. And this allows the ability to take care of what has been a significant part of Minnesota life, whether you talk about hunting and fishing, clean water, which was clearly the political driver during the campaign in 2008, the significant arts, cultural, and historical communities. You would see absolutely no funding absent something like this. So that's why the utilization of the sales tax, I think I have gone on long enough if Mr. Mueller has the number.
Mr. Chair, I might hold this question for a later date.
Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, you caught me with my wrong folder, but this spreadsheet here shows the previous biennium at least, and that total was $556 million. I think the biennium before that, since it was a shortened first year, I think it was like 480 or something like that. But I'll get that to you. I have a spreadsheet that shows all the years.
I would appreciate that for further reference.
I will do that.
And again, I appreciate the work that's been done on this, and I certainly appreciate being member of the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage since its inception. Once again, letting those folks do the good work that they do, and I know certainly the administration appreciates that, and I just wanted to convey that.
And Mr. Chairman, I don't mean to turn the committee meeting into a series of compliments, but I just want to make it clear, Senator Ingebrigtsen and chairing.
Well, it's very hard for me to do that this time of night.
Senator Ingebrigtsen and chairing the Environment Finance Division 2 years ago and having responsibility for the entirety of the legacy monies asked for help from myself. He and both former Senator Koch were very generous in allowing me to participate, particularly with Article 4. And he's obviously very conversant with what is intended and appreciate not just the support I've had from him this session, but we've spent some time together relative to some of these recommendations. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure what the wish of committee members. We can go through this and
let's move it.
Just a couple more questions, Mr. Chair. No, I guess I'll hold those. Thanks.
Like Senator Westrom, I have a series of questions and then some comments. I shouldn't tease him. He's out of the room. So, Mr. Chair, do you have should we redo our motion? What is your pleasure with respect to?
I made the motion that the bill as amended be passed and referred to the full committee on finance.
What is your pleasure with respect? I know there's at least someone who vaguely indicated perhaps wanting to come to the table to speak, but
certainly, I'm not sure if there are other people. If there are other folks, we had some testimony yesterday, but if other folks who wanted to testify, by all means.
All right, we will invite folks to the table for some brief testimony. We'll have other opportunity, of course, in full finance. I'll just remind folks, it's 9:15. And I actually have family and friends at a restaurant waiting for me. I've been for a while. So please come to the table, whoever would like to testify.
Mr. Chairman, what division are you chairman of? So we can just remember that.
Yes. All right, please come. Welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rebecca Flood. I'm an assistant commissioner for water policy at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and I also chair our interagency Clean Water Fund coordinating team. And I would just like to point out a couple of differences between the governor's recommendations and the Senate proposal from a high-order sort of approach. The Senate bill underfunds a few of the priorities of the governor and the Clean Water Interagency Coordination Team. Examples include the Minnesota Department of Agriculture's Agricultural Water Quality Certification Program at $2 million underfunded, and Public Health Water Protection, $1.3 million in Minnesota Department of Health programs. Secondly, program funding by the Clean Water Fund versus project funding by bonding. The Senate bill funds a number of projects that historically received bonding dollars. The Clean Water Fund is not a substitute for a bonding bill, as Senator Cohen mentioned previously. The Senate needs a bonding bill. Examples include $1.5 million for Voyageurs National Park wastewater projects appropriated currently to the PCA in this bill, and $1 million for infiltration and inflow reduction in the metropolitan area. Lastly, the general fund budget funding versus clean water funding of programs. The Senate uses the Clean Water Fund to finance programs the governor's regular budget handles because they're more appropriate in other portions of the budget rather than in clean water funds. Examples include $6 million in groundwater program at the DNR. The DNR has proposed, and the governor's budget proposes, a fee versus uses of the Clean Water Fund, and $900,000 for the Board of Water and Soil Resources, One Watershed, One Plan management approach. So with that, I'd also invite some comments from Director John Jasky from the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and Matt Wallman, Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Agriculture.
Thank you, Ms. Flood. Any questions, members? Mr. Jasky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John Jasky, Director, Board of Water and Soil Resources. Ms. Flood described kind of an overview. I think there's going to need to be some reconciliation between some of the items that are in Senator Tom Soney's bill and this bill, and she highlighted two of those. One is the groundwater fees, and the DNR can speak to that if there are questions about that. I specifically would want to mention the One Watershed, One Plan provision, which, again, was included in the governor's recommendation under the general fund budget, and the Senate has identified it for funding with the Clean Water Fund. So there's a difference in that one item. So I'll turn over to Mr. Wallman, unless there's a question for me.
Questions for Mr. Jasky. Mr. Wallman, welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Matt Wallman, Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. One of the concerns we have, obviously, is the underfunding of the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program by $2 million. As some of you may recall, about a year and a half ago, Governor Dayton and Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack and EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson got together here in St. Paul and signed a memorandum of understanding to create this Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program. We put together an advisory committee that met over the summer and put together a series of recommendations, And those recommendations that were provided by the committee are included in some of the policy provisions that have been working its way through both the House and the Senate. We believe that we need the whole $3 million request from the governor's proposal. There is about $6 million from the NRCS, the federal Department of Agriculture, that's on the line here that we're leveraging with the state's investment. Without that full investment, we stand the chance of losing part of the federal government participation.
Thanks, Mr. Warman. Questions, members? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you. My name is Barb Peichel, Chair and members. I am coordinator for the Clean Water Council, and thank you for the opportunity to testify since we were not able to attend yesterday's meeting. I'll keep this brief in regards to the time. Again, the Clean Water Council was established in 2006 to provide advice and administration and implementation of the Clean Water Legacy Act and also foster coordination and communication between the different public and private entities. And it does that because it has 28 members from diverse organizations on the membership, and we meet monthly. And those folks that are serving on a Budget and Outcomes Committee actually meet more often than that to prepare these budget recommendations for the legislature, which is required by statutes by December 1st of every even-numbered year. And I'm just going to talk a little bit about the process that the Clean Water Council and its subcommittee goes through. They actually, this time around, came out with priority percentages to between the different types of programs. So, for example, the monitoring program, the council recommended, about 12%. And then they sat down and looked at the different programs and tried to figure out what that right balance is. So overall, the council recommended steady funding for the types of overall activities like monitoring at 12% and watershed restoration protection at 12%, and those are right in line with the Senate bill in front of you today. And they recommended increased funding for groundwater and drinking water. Again, the constitutional amendment talks about having at least 5%. For drinking water, and the council did recommend 12% and had a number of meetings, are going to meet again on water appropriations in June. So they do know that is an important issue, they feel like there's an important balance between planning and research and monitoring actually on the ground implementation activities. So when the voters ask you, the legislators, and ask us, the Clean Water Council, is our water cleaner? That's what we hear. I think that's probably what you hear from your constituents. We'll be able to turn around and say, yes, we had the right balance. We did provide enough funding for implementation to achieve the maximum improvements in clean water. Every dollar that's invested for implementation matches another $1.45 from local, federal, and private sources. So that's really where, and especially as you go into conference committee, which I'm sure will be interesting this year, we want you to know that that's a big priority. That's what we're hearing from all our diverse groups, that implementation is very important. And in addition, and other important items are providing for local capacity, looking at accountability and outcomes, maintaining that 10-year kind of watershed planning process. I think that's all I'm going to say today, and just thank you for your time and thank you for your leadership on this.
Thanks, Ms. Peichel. Questions, members? All right, thank you. Board, thank you. Introduce yourself.
Members of the committee, Mr. Chair, my name is Annalie Garlitz, and I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties. And since the agency's already talked a lot about the Clean Water Council recommendations and the governor's recommendations, I will also try to be brief. The piece in particular that I would like to comment on are lines 25.8 through 25.31, the septic system funding. Counties get a very small base grant of septic system funding to carry out mandated rules that the state asks us to for our septic system programs. Over the last several years, since the inception of the Clean Water Legacy Grants, we have been receiving enhanced program base grants through this fund, and that has allowed counties to build up their programs. By changing the allocations in the first year of this, that consistent funding level that counties have had over the past several years, that will drop significantly. And it will also change a program that we've been working with the Pollution Control Agency to provide advanced inspections that we're hoping to ramp up and get going. That may also go away and not be available for counties as we've been anticipating. So this is just some... Just a comment that I would like to share from counties that were concerned about dropping that base grant funding in that first year. Counties rely on that, and if we have to get rid of a staff person because we don't get those dollars, and then to have to hire them again in the second year, that removes the consistency from the program.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Garlitz. Questions, members? All right, thank you. Anyone else? Senator Collins. Oh, Mr. Hansen. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Tom Hansen with Winthrop and Weinstein, and I represent the Association of Minnesota Public Educational Radio Stations, AMPERS. And I just need about 45 seconds. First of all, we want to thank you for your support for the stations. I did want to call attention to the fact that our organization has three new Native American stations. So the appropriation is spread out over three more stations. So the number that you have in the bill is actually would represent a reduction for our stations because we have three more new stations. And we're not a network, Mr. Chairman, members. They're all independently independent stations that happen to be part of a association. So I just wanted to call attention to that respectfully. Okay, and thank you for your
thank you. Questions for Mr. Hansen, member. All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, members, just very quickly, without trying to go spend as much time as we already have, just a couple of thoughts on some of the appropriations. There was a concern expressed by Ms. Flood relative to the infiltration inflow, the metro provision, with the feeling that it's more appropriate for bonding. I don't think Senator Stump's going to be able to bond for that, and that's why this was provided in this fashion. He's not here this evening, and so I hesitate to speak for him, but I do want to point out that I do want to mention that I've not seen a spreadsheet of his in total detail, but I've had conversations with Senator Stumpf, and the reason it's in this bill was at his request. I recognize that a very significant concern is the question of the fees, which are not utilized in this bill, doing it through, as opposed to Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, having the fees in your environment bill. There were discussions with a number of people in the Senate, and there's been an effort in the Senate to try to minimize the utilization of fees. That's certainly not being followed 100%, but not only in this regard, but just, Mr. Chairman, to go to something totally disparate, if you look at the judiciary bill authored by Senator Latz, we use general fund dollars to augment some of those accounts, not fees as used in the other body. So this is something that's not to single out the important work being done by the state agencies, but is something that is not a hard and fast in position, but something we've been attempting to do.
Senator Stephen has a question.
Mr. Chair and Senator Cohen, to your point about the inflow and infiltration program, I believe that proposal has been bonded for in the past, and I see Patty Nauman here from Metro Cities. Perhaps she could just clarify if that is okay, and right. You know, whether there'll be a bonding bill may be another issue. At least to whether it's been bondable in the past.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the executive director of Metro Cities. The inflow and infiltration, the bonding dollars that have been secured in the past for this work have been can only be used for local public infrastructure. The clean water funds can be used to help with mitigation efforts on the private side of this issue. So in other words, the infrastructure that is on the homeowner side of the equation, which is a very big issue with respect to the problem of inflow and infiltration of clean water into the regional wastewater pipes. So they are two different issues. It's the same problem, but two different sides of the infrastructure equation. So.
All right.
And,
thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm not disagreeing with that at all. I'm just suggesting what some of my conversations have been with Senator Stumpf.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just very quickly, a couple of other things. There was some discussion about the Agriculture Water Quality Certification Program, and certainly I'm aware of what had been proposed with the governor and Secretary Vilsack. In all honesty, and there's certainly no question that relative to what has been presented, this underfunds. However, the Senate has not passed the total program as requested. I'll be honest, there have been some concerns expressed by Senator Sparks with the provisions under his jurisdiction, and so the funding in this proposal is meant to comport with what I think where the Senate is presently. Obviously, that could change in these next few days, could change in the context of a conference committee, but I believe that that is it represents where the Senate is presently. I think in terms of some of the other concerns, obviously the conference committee process might be of some utilization. I do want to just very briefly address former Commissioner Hansen's comment about AMPRs, which I have been a strong proponent of. Just given some of the availability of money, you'll notice, members, that there is an equalization between the AMPRs grants and the NPR grants, and there's no question there are some newer, smaller stations doing some important work with AMPRs. Again, it's a question of where the money goes.
All right. Thank you, Senator Cohen. Further members, any questions? Senator Cohen, your motion?
The motion's on the table.
All right. Any questions on Senator Cohen's motion? Any comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Nothing further before the committee. We are adjourned.